Hello and well.
Hello and welcome to The Dish, a Connectivity Business News podcast. My name is Madeline Durrett, Senior Associate Editor at Connectivity Business News, and today we're speaking with Mustafa Bezaroglu, CEO of Mynaric, to discuss the company's growth into a leading producer of laser communications technologies. Mustafa, thank you so much for joining us.
Madeline, thank you for inviting us, and it's my pleasure.
So Mynaric actually began as a startup that evolved into a large public company with serial production capabilities for its laser communications technologies. Would you tell us about Mynaric's journey from a startup to a scale-up? What was the most challenging part of the process?
Absolutely. I think our journey, really, I can divide it into three sections. The first part is the engineering foundation, tinkering, figuring out what's possible, where are the possible applications, et cetera, of the laser communication. The second part really is defining the vision of great, wonderful, this technology is available, but where can we utilize this? And the third part is really application of the technology in a specific market that has really high volume production capability. So each one of these phases, journeys, really is an event in and of itself and has its own challenges. As a startup, you have the initial excitement and challenges and doubts about what's possible. The second part was really started about 5 years ago with our former CEO, Bülent Altan, who is now the supervisory board chair of Mynaric AG, and he set up the vision of what is possible and what's believed in, what's possibility in the future, and set the company up for essentially realizing that vision. And the third stage really coincides with my arrival, which is execution of that vision and implementation. I would say the second and third phases, the vision, seeing the vision, putting the capabilities in place, had its own challenges because it required a lot of financial identification of resources of money as well as capabilities, et cetera. And right now, the stage we're in, which is execution of the high volume production, has its own excitements and challenges and has its own merits as well. So It's been pretty exciting all throughout, though.
Thank you. And what were some of the specific factors or maybe an event that made Mynaric realize, hey, we really have a business model here that we could turn into something big?
So I would say, and this was probably about 4 or 5 years ago with Bilant, realizing that the laser communication has very distinct advantages over radio frequency, and couple that with the significant advances by SpaceX with bringing down the cost of launching things in space and realizing there's potentially a new space market out there enabled by the lowering cost of transporting communication vehicles to space. I'd say that's the turning point. Again, the launch cost coming down, the maturity of the laser communication coming in place, and those two being a perfect match, I think that's when we realized that there's a lot of opportunities for us in high volume serial production of laser communication for space.
Thank you. And once Starship is operational, some industry experts think that the cost to launch could go down by half, even more. How would this impact the laser communications market?
I think from our perspective, anytime you reduce the cost of entry to space is a welcome event for us. So if the Starship brings the cost of launch by a factor of two, then more end markets will be enabled by applications in space, and connectivity in space fundamentally will be done by laser communication. So this, again, expands our opportunities in space, and we welcome that.
While a German-based company, Mynaric has received multinational investor support. Who were some of Mynaric's earliest investors, and was there a specific type of investor Mynaric was looking for as a young company?
I think the early part of it was more of the retail investors in Europe. That's where we went public in Germany. And that enabled us to really explore what's possibilities were. And it wasn't as big of an investment as what we turned out to be needing for this market. Realizing this and realizing the vision that we had in place about 3, 4, or 5 years ago, we needed additional capital, and we also needed capital more available in the U.S. And that's when we went public again in NASDAQ about 3+ years ago. And that allowed us to have investors that are used to making technology investment for multi-year returns that have patient capital and receiving that. And we took all that money. We raised, I think, somewhere around $80, $90 million from U.S. Raising of the capital in the U.S. going public. And we put all that investment in creating the infrastructure necessary for building a business for new space. So that's also gives me an opportunity to highlight the DNA of the company. We are looking forward. We are leaning in and making investments ahead of demand, which means that we saw the opportunities in space. We saw the volumes that potentially could be. And we were able to raise this money, share this vision, and raise this money that allowed us to get into the facilities we have today, which is a leading-edge, high-volume manufacturing capability that's now setting us up for success for the next several years.
Wow. Well, Mynaric has certainly grown quite a bit since then. You recently reported an optical communications terminal backlog of 794 units. What have been Mynaric's strategies for growing its company backlog and customer base?
Yeah, I'd say there are a couple of parts of it. One is really short-term maximizing the opportunities. That's really the market that was in front of us was U.S. government-based applications, in particular the Space Development Agency. So we put a major emphasis and focus on supporting Space Development Agency's activities and realizing as much market share from that, those opportunities. That's leg one. Leg two is, again, discussion about the new space applications. There will be a very large commercial opportunities for laser communication. These are in the near term, it will be large constellations, whether it is Eutelsat OneWeb combination or Telesat, the MDA with their constellations. There's going to be many opportunities like that. So focusing on commercial constellation was our second leg of our strategy. And the third leg of the strategy was focusing on non-U.S. International opportunities. So primarily Europe, which allows us, since we're headquartered here, to leverage that. And that could be some programs like IRIS², as well as a whole bunch of international companies that are seeing the opportunities in new space and getting into this market. So those three strategies are setting us up both for short-term success as well as long-term opportunities to grow the market for us. Now, within those, obviously, the fundamental thing is we're focused on the customer. We're focused on meeting the needs of our customer. Every customer that we have acquired becomes a great testament for our ability to meet their needs. So focusing on the customer is by and large, our number one priority. So our customers become, current customers become our biggest advocates for new opportunities.
Thank you. And you mentioned that you're focused on serving both the defense and commercial sector, but I know that you've been working especially closely with the SDA and DARPA, enabling satellites in varying orbits to efficiently send data back and forth is critical, especially for mega constellations such as the SDAs. But would you elaborate on the significant security benefits that make laser communications particularly ideal for defense networks?
Right. So for a very good question, Alan. So the fundamentally, whether U.S. market or European or others, it's not the price of the terminal that matters as much as the capabilities that you bring to party. So while we have fundamental cost advantages over radio frequency, that was not the decision criteria for U.S. government. The two distinct things that probably drove the U.S. government and now the Europeans is laser communications are hard to detect and hard to intercept. So if you cannot intercept, you cannot detect, then it's a fairly good secure communication in and of itself beyond the, encrypting the data and all that stuff. And one of the advantages of why it's not easy to intercept and detect is that the communication is done through laser, and that is a pretty narrow beam even at 5,000 kilometers away. So unless you're in the line of path of that communication, it is hard to essentially eavesdrop on that. And that's not true in the radio frequency. So that's, from that perspective, a low probability of intercept and low probability of detection is one advantage as to why that's the case. Related to that is if you cannot intercept and detect, it's also very hard to jam. So in difficult conditions, you can continue to communicate with lasers that you are not going to be able to use with radio frequency. So that's one fundamental advantage. The other advantage as to why it is it's gaining significant favor in the U.S. government and elsewhere is that technology that allows us to communicate also allows us the foundation for creating alternative position navigation and timing information. And think of it as alternative GPS. So in the area of competing with near-peer nations where, if your GPS signal gets jammed and you are really all the advanced technology is going to be harder to be utilizable, having laser communication that's operating through GPS-denied environment, radio frequency-denied environment, and that providing alternative position navigation timing, hence alternative GPS information, is really crucial. So the combination of these two is driving the capability for the need for using this capability for the U.S. government. Lastly, the amount of data that you can provide with laser communication is significantly higher than radio frequency. So as we gather more sensors and more information, being able to transport that data effectively is another advantage. But again, you know, size, weight, power, we have significant advantages over alternative technology. It's a higher security because of the detection or interception and jammability. So those are the fundamental reasons why it's being utilized now.
Thank you. So laser communications could improve the satellites themselves, such as their size or design?
Well, it does impact in satellites from the perspective of now you can put the same capability in a much smaller footprint from a size perspective, a weight perspective, a power perspective. And in satellites, those are design criteria. What kind of power does a satellite provide to the payload? What kind of weight do you have to launch to get there? What kind of space do you need in the satellite? So the fact that the laser communication requires less has positive impacts on the designs of the satellite and the requirements on that.
Then lunar and deep space missions are beginning to pick up around the globe. What role will optical communications technologies play in cislunar communications and more complex deep space missions, like manned and even robotic missions?
Yeah, it will be a fundamental capability. I believe that all long-range communication will be done through optical communication because, again, it provides a much more effective size, weight, power for deep space communication. When we're talking about cislunar, now we're not talking 5,000 kilometers, we're talking substantially longer distances. So it will be a fundamental capability. However, I have to say that's not an area of focus for us.
Thank you. And then Forbes recently called laser communications the future of new space. Firstly, do you agree with this assessment?
Absolutely. I think it has a lot of fundamental advantages, and in space, it doesn't have any of the drawbacks that would have made laser communication more difficult terrestrially. So it is really laser communication is ideal in space applications. So it's fundamental.
And I know that new space, it seems to be very important in Germany, which will host the 2024 New Space Summit, not far from Mynaric's headquarters. How can established companies such as Mynaric that began as startups serve as leaders for newcomers?
Well, I think, you know, if you're a startup, you have a fundamental thesis about what you're going to do. So having examples of success like us becomes it gives more confidence to the investors of that new company. So that's sort of one benefit. The second benefit is that through success of Mynaric and others like us, it has created a new venture funds that are more dedicated for European investment. So like Alpine Ventures, for example, focuses on European space innovation area. So there are a number of things that the success of Mynaric and companies like us creating a successful model for other startups to use.
And what advice would you give new startups trying to make it in the space and satellite industry?
Very good question. Couple, actually. Number one, customer is king. Remember that at the end of the day, whatever you do, you have to be able to sell that idea to somebody, and that's your customer. So make sure that you start with your customer in mind. What are your customers' needs? What problems that they're trying to solve? And anticipate their requirements. And once you do that and you have conviction and understanding of those needs, invest ahead of demand. Because when time comes, if you tell your customer that, yeah, trust me, give me your order and I'll set up a manufacturing capability, that's not a good way to sell. So, again, focus on your customer, invest ahead of the requirements, and make sure that you strive to deliver on your commitment to your customers.
Invest ahead of demand. That's great advice. Well, that does about wrap up today's episode. Thanks so much to Mustafa Fezaroglu, CEO of Mynaric, for joining us. This has been the Dish Podcast by Connectivity Business News.